We shouldn't try to bring justice, because when we do,
we cause injustice.
Pasuk Tet Zayin, Kama Mishpat Shama HaReshem, Kama Tzedek Shama HaRasha, Amarten Eveli Biyat HaTzedik Vet HaRasha Yishpot HaElokim, Ki Eid L'chol Chevet V'al Kol HaMaaseh Sham. The last philosophy he rejects, beginning Yud Chet, going through Chof Aleph, is what? Regarding what men say that they are chosen by God, upon re-reflection we see that we're really more like
animals.
Animals. What shows that we're more like animals? What?
We're dead.
We all die and we end up the same way. Nothing is left of man beyond animal. And if one would claim, as a way of rejecting this claim, that man has a soul, really can know that man has a soul that goes up after him. We don't know, and if we don't know, we can't be expected to invest in it. And therefore, pasuk pet, conclusion, vereiti ki ein tov me'asher yismacha adam b'ma'asav ki hu chalko. This is all we really have. Ki mi yivienu lirot b'meshe yacharav. Since we don't know what's going to be in the world beyond us, all we know is this world. All we see in this world is that we die, which nullifies the significance of everything. And therefore, we should just enjoy whatever we can while we're alive. That's what we did last time. I think we began Perek Dal, but let's begin it again now. How do you know that Perek Dal is the beginning of a new reflection?
It says so.
It says so. How does it say so?
Shafti ani.
Shafti ani. I went back and looked. What's the first problem he focuses on here? The problem of his word?
Impression.
That's not his word, but it is the correct translation. Ashukim. I see the ashukim, the oppressed people. What particularly about oppressed people frustrates him? He uses a phrase, three-word phrase, twice.
Okay.
Nobody consoles them. Why does nobody console them? How does this problem flow out of the philosophy expressed in Perek Gimel?
You can't change anything. They're stuck.
What do you mean, if you can't change anything?
And you can't give them any... can't console them.
Can? We can give people money. Can't give them stock.
Then other people will be poor.
So we should spread the resources.
We shouldn't try.
You shouldn't try. Why?
Because God has it in order. There's a balance. And where we...
You guys probably didn't know that Adin Kanevsky is Roman. The Gemara in Baba Basra Daf Yud says that the Roman general Turnus Rufus came to Rabbi Akiva and said, "You're an apikoros if you give tzedakah." Because if God wanted the poor person to have money,
he would
have given them money. The Romans were the first republicans. Right? If he wanted that money, he would have given him money. I understand. What are you doing? The same Turnus Rufus, by the way, according to the Medrash, challenged Rabbi Akiva about what other mitzvah? Bris Milah. If God wanted you to be that way, he would have created you that way. The assumption is the world is made the way God wants it. We're not allowed to change. We're not meant to change it. We should enjoy whatever we can. If that's the way you see life, so people who are suffering aren't your problem. I want to tell you a story. Beginning of the 20th century, capitalism in America and England and Western countries was what it was meant to be. Not like it is today. Today there's no real capitalistic country. Have you heard of welfare, social security, unemployment, food stamps? Those are not capitalistic concepts. Those are socialistic concepts, right? But in America, there was no slavery in the beginning of the 20th century, but there were no workers' rights either. There was a mass influx of millions of workers who didn't have jobs. And basically a manufacturer could define whatever terms he wanted. And that's what they did. There were towns where you had to sell your soul. Coal towns, steel towns. There were sweatshops where you worked 14 hours a day. You made a penny each hour. You don't want to work? Okay, sure. Let's work. There were no health benefits. There were no days off. There was no sick leave. There was no social security unemployment. You don't want to work? Don't come. Rav Kook saw this going on in the 1910s in London. You know, he was in London for a few years in the 1910s. And he said, "Now I understand why the Torah allows for slavery. Because at least a slave you care about taking care of. So there's always going to be a lower class that's working for the upper class. Let's make sure the lower class is taken care of, because what was going on in England was worse than slavery. You were free, but there was nothing you could do with it." I see the ashukim asher nasim tachat hashamish. She comes out of this. Not only that they're oppressed, but that nobody cares. It's not my job to care. I can't care. God will care. And life can be so bad, pasuk bet, that the shabeach ani etameitim shekvar meitu min hachayim asher hem hachayim adana. Those who've died are luckier than those who are still alive. V'tov mishnehem et asher eden lo haya. Better than either of them is a person who never even had to live. Asher lo ra'at ha'maseh hara asher nasa tachat ha'shamash. Maybe we take for granted that life is a good, enjoyable thing. Is that what the Gemara says? Interesting, the lashon used in the Gemara. Noach lo liadam shelo yanivra. What does that mean?
It
would have been easier to not have been born. And you guys are living at the high point of life, right? You know, you have everything provided by your parents, and, you know, you live at home, and then when you work, and who gets to keep the money? That's my money. Room, board, food, life, and that's my money. Come to your father. I need money to go to a ball game. And you just earn money. No, that's my money. Real life is not exactly that way. Yes, Svi? Mm-hmm. They are pressed by their oppressors who have the strength, and they have no consoler. By the way, as long as we're back to that pasuk, or else in Tanakh, famously, does it talk about the frustration of being alone? The Ein Lehem Menachem, same phrase used twice?
Echa.
The frustration in Echa is not as much about the suffering of Jewish people as it is about the loneliness and abandonment. The same phrase is used, right? She sits alone, Ein Lehem Menachem, no one cares. It's felt, the feeling of having been betrayed and abandoned. Yes?
Why does the fact that they're oppressed mean that he shouldn't be happy with what he has?
Pasuk Dalet. Number one, you can say, all right, there's a problem of oppression in the world, we should enjoy whatever we have. Finished. I think there's two reasons why. That doesn't really work. First, I'm going to tell you a personal story. Okay? I was once sitting in a restaurant in Manhattan. Kosher restaurant. Big glass window. You know these street restaurants where your mom is like on the sidewalk, there's a glass. You know, I ordered food, overpriced meal, you know, right? You got your meal, big steak, French fries, the way I like it, right down in front of me. I look to my left, and like this close to me, right past the glass, is this homeless dude looking at the food. I suddenly lost my appetite. I got some psychological. Why did I lose my appetite? How can I enjoy life? For sure, an overpriced steak. When there's some guy who has nothing. You know, if you ever become a beggar, hopefully not. The best place to go collecting, better than the rest, is to go to a wedding. I want to explain to a chalos wedding. A wedding is not just a wedding hall. It's not just a place with carpet and free food. It is, by the way, a place with carpet and free food. You know, having been in yeshiva, like, you know, I went up to the guy at the smorgasbord. He gives me some stuff. I'm like, oh, here, I can ask for more. It'd be nice to smile. Can I have some more? Sure. Like, more? Let's see how many times I can ask, right? Let's keep dishing it out. It's freaking free food. But it's much more than free food. It's much more than free food. A wedding is supposed to be a place where you feel that life is beautiful. Can I take your coat, sir? What can I help you with, sir? What do you need? Everyone's smiling. Everyone's so cordial and nice, right? Once I go to a wedding, they have a new waiter who's like mean. They get them out of there because the whole point is it's supposed to be. So a poor person walks up the street. The same guy who'd get a nickel down the block, people give him $10. Because they want to believe that life is better. Second best place to collect money is a restaurant. Because people don't go to a restaurant. You're not going to a restaurant because you think you're going to get food that's priced properly. You go to a restaurant because it's a chavaya. We're going out to eat. Go out to eat, you have food, it's nice, you pay extra, you pay $12 for a piece of chocolate cake, it's very nice. Poor person comes in. If you're a restaurant owner, hopefully you'll be an owner before a beggar, what do you do when that guy walks in? You give him money, you kick him out outside, give him money, send him on his way. Even better than money, by the way, you give him a sandwich, because you give him money, he's going to go either for drugs or alcohol. Because if you let that guy into your restaurant, nobody's going to order dessert. It's very hard to live with the rain. I don't know if you guys know, when I was a kid in New York, I used to stop at a light. Three guys with squeegees would come and start cleaning your window. You'd walk in the subway, there'd be guys sleeping all over the floor. Mom's like, negotiating for space. I don't know, maybe a little before your time, there was a mayor in New York named Rudy Giuliani. You know what I mean? He got rid of them all. Why? People liked it. Why'd I have to get rid of them all? So the official excuse they used was they're dangerous. They weren't very dangerous. Why'd they get rid of them? Because you can't live in New York and think life is great and everything's wonderful if you see these guys in your face all day. We can't live the dream life that we convince ourselves life is about when you face the reality, literally, of these people suffering. But I want to get to the second point, because Mr. Chizkis, wait a second, that's not Pasuk Dalet. Let's see Pasuk Dalet now. V're'iti ani et kol amal v'et kol kishrona ma'aseh ki hi kinat ish me're'ehu gam zehev al ro'ot ruach. The second v're'iti here, remember Pasuk Dalet, v'shaft eni v'ere'eh, what's the second v're'iti about?
It's Kishron. Kishron.
It does mention Kishron. Kishron is, let's see what it says here. Skill for enterprise. That's not the focus of the pasuk, though. I see that the result of all the Kishron HaMaaseh is Kinat Ish Me're'ehu.
He was trying to show everyone.
What's Kina?
Jealousy.
Jealousy, right? Meaning, if the purpose of life is to enjoy as much as you have as much as you can, have as much as you can have, so then, no matter how much you have, you're always going to be jealous of somebody else, not satisfied with what you have. It's almost prophetic about the reality we live in. Even those who have, don't have enough. I read recently a poll, whatever they did. They took like some of the richest families in the world. I'm not talking about people who have $1 billion. People have like $50 billion. And they interviewed their kids. And what came across was to hear how frustrated and unhappy. This one has more money, this one has a better house, this one has more ski, longer ski vacation, this one. It was like shocking for the public, because any of us would be like, cool, right? You get whatever you want. No. If you can have whatever you want, then you want whatever you can have. And whatever you don't have, you want, and you miss, and you feel you don't have. You know, people who are poor, it's hard, but at least they tell themselves that if I had more money, life would be happy. So I'll work for that, and then maybe I'll be happier. But what happens when you have everything? And you're not satisfied? Kinat ish merayehu. Before we take questions, I'm going to finish the idea. Haksil choveket yadav ve'ochelet bisaro. The fool, which is another word he used for the hedonist, who we just saw in Perek Gimel, is eating his flesh. He's eating himself out from the inside. Tov melochaf nachat mi melochaf nayim amal rot ruach. Better to have a spoonful of sugar, a spoonful of serenity. A small handful of serenity is better than fistful of work and frustration. V'shafti ani v'ere, point number three, hevel tachat hashamesh, yesh echad v'ein sheni. There's one without a second. Gam bein va'ach ein lo. He doesn't even have a son or a brother. V'ein keitz l'chol amalo. Gam eino lo tispa'o she'olami ani amelo mechaseret nafshi mitova. Gam zehevel v'ein ran rahu. What phenomenon is he describing in Pasuk Chet?
Loneliness.
Loneliness to the point where we don't even have a son or a brother. Where does it come from, this loneliness? How does it come from what we were just discussing? If we all know that we have no responsibilities in this world, the world is about whatever we can enjoy. So ultimately, why should I care about anyone, even my own son? The relationships we take for granted and assume should matter. We consider it ruthless today, heartless, to turn on your friend, to turn on your relative. But misvara, why not? Why should I care? Why should I care about anyone? You know, soap operas. Oh, you guys never watched the soap operas, being boys, right? Yeah. Maybe once you caught your right. What's the word of a soap opera? What are they all about? Soap operas are about the express human ambition and desire, and they're about how people are willing to pursue those things even at the cost of betraying anyone and everyone. Like, so the first season, the guy betrays his friend. In the next season, he betrays his partner. Then he betrays his brother, his mother, his father, his son. You know, season 2, season 3, season 4, season 5. And we're like, oh. And I think, oh. Why shouldn't we betray? Because some religion that we no longer believe in created a moral code that's meant to restrict us? I remember the first soap opera was actually a night show. It was called Dallas. You can look it up online. But, and it was about this rich oil baron who, you know, he was a mamzer, and he was mean to everyone. Then in the end of one season, his name was J.R. The end of one season, someone shot J.R. And the big question the season ended with, it went in a whole summer, was like, who shot J.R.? Who shot J.R.? You can put it on the internet. Who shot J.R.? You'll see the whole story. And the reason it was such an interesting question is because everyone had a reason to shoot J.R. As it was big Chagiris. You know, did his son shoot him? Did his wife shoot him? The ex-wife, future wife? You know, and everyone's like, who's the shooter? Now, of course, the whole thing was the next season opened and they introduced you to a new character you didn't even know about who he messed over. Who was the one who shot J.R.? And that was the point. Now, beyond, you know, not meaning to care about anyone, there's a loneliness when you think your realization is only about yourself. That's an ironic thing, I think, about today's world, today's culture. People are connecting with thousands of people they don't even know. But none of the relationships are real. And by the way, this was like a major underlying theme of Seinfeld, for those who ever heard of the show. Seinfeld was about a bunch of very selfish people who had enough of a relationship with each other that they could share with each other and give advice to each other about how to manipulate and take advantage of other people. And that's why the final episode was where they took advantage of someone they put in jail, and like a funny for a small thing, and then they were put on trial for all of the, you know, the terrible things they had done to everyone throughout all the seasons. And why did that show resonate with people? Because most of us aren't willing to live like Eddie Murphy, right? You know, traditionally, he's a figure who represents taking advantage, etc. But part of us is jealous of that. But is it a surprise that people end up lonely? I went to the rabbi, Rabbi Blech. He was speaking about the Shidduch crisis on the Upper West Side, and he said, the problem on the Upper West Side is that people treat their dogs like girlfriends and their girlfriends like dogs. What he meant was, people don't know how to love and respect other people. People have a need to show love to somebody or something. So for that, we get ourselves a dog. Because a dog is a helpless creature who doesn't really compete with us. This is the loneliness that can be the extreme result of a system that sees the whole purpose of the world of being about the pleasure I can have. Okay, questions, and then we'll continue. Yes, up three. Yes, Ari. Right, yeah.
Two things. One, it doesn't seem like his advice to us back to the very end of the of Gimel, that you should be smach adam ma'asav, you should be happy with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean, doesn't necessarily imply that you have to be constantly working. It means you should be getting happiness from your work, not...
He's not talking here about constantly working or not. He's talking about how no matter what a person has, he's not happy.
But that's not being happy with what you have, not being happy with what you... Meaning
he's saying it's not possible within the reality we live to be happy. That's what he's claiming.
Not following his own advice. Meaning if he follows advice, then you will be
happy. Advice is wonderful, it just doesn't work. And he's saying now it doesn't work. It's nice to say, but it doesn't work. He's explaining why it doesn't work. You say you had a second point?
Yeah. If you realize that relationships are also for you, meaning that you, mm-hmm. the reason you invest in a relationship is for you, so then you won't be lonely. Then
Let's continue. So, does anyone know historically what the answer to the, you know, the problems I was talking about at the beginning of the 20th century was? Universally. What was the answer that civilization found? That answer's already been debunked also, so you may not be familiar. Well, you call it communism, but it was really socialism. Communism was a particular expression of it. And part of the problem we have is that because of the Iron Curtain and the evil Soviet Empire, the whole philosophy has become something that's looked at as a joke or as demonous. The truth is, in principle, it makes a lot of sense. And you should know that most of the world's philosophers and ideologues identified in the 20th century with socialism. And most Jews did. Not because they were throwing away the religion, because they believed that's where the religion came from. That Judaism is about caring for other people, building a society together. Pasuk Tet. Tovim hashnayim min ha'echad. Two are better than one. Asher yesh lehem sachar tov ba'amalam, because they have good sachar for their work. How does this relate to Pasuk Chet? One of the implications he presented there of the loneliness was that if I really have no one else in the world, I'm never satisfied. And who am I really working for if it's really just me? I work and I get more money and more money and more money and more possessions and more possessions. I'm not satisfied personally, and there's no one really for me to give them to. Because I'm going to have to find some nebuch to, you know, to devote a hospital to. Make myself feel good. When two people can see themselves as a unit, then yesh lem sechar tov ba'malam. Lo tov heyota adam levado. When man is alone, a singular creature, it's not good. Man feels good, is good. This pasuk, I think, is clearly building off that concept. Lo tov heyot adam levado. Two people who can see themselves as unified are better than one. Pasuk yud, ki im yipolu. If they fall down, ha'echad yakim et chaveiro. One will help his friend up. Filo ha'echad she yipol. Ein sheni lakimo. Gam im yishkevu shnayim. And let's say they both fall down. At least v'cham lahem. It's warm for them. Why is it warm for them? I don't just mean physically they'll bundle up in the cold. But why is it warm when you fall together with someone?
Misery, love, company.
Someone to sympathize with you. Someone to be there with you. Someone to suffer together with you. Now what's interesting is that we fell for the propaganda that our Western societies sold us on regarding the Soviet Union, regarding socialist countries, regarding China. You wonder, if you took a poll and it found some way of measuring happiness, whether people in China or New York are happier.
They did
that. They did? What'd they come out with?
If you remember, the happiest man in the world is like a 60-year-old Jew who lives in Hawaii.
In Hawaii. I think he's Hawaii. There's no way that can be true because Jews are an unhappy people. Okay, I'm putting aside right now an extreme case of one. By the way, I have a student who's a psychologist who told me that they have figured out that Jewish males have double the level of depression as parallel males, you know, not Jewish. So I asked him right away, I said, is that Jews or Orthodox? Because I want to know, is it nature or nurture? Meaning, is something Jewish? You know, is Shveret Zayin a Yid? You know, it's tough to be a Jew, you know, that whole thing. So again, it could be this one Jew who's beating the, you know, I'm not talking about one guy. I'm talking about the culture.
No, that's how they did it. They did it based on, like, every single different factor, and then they put them all together.
If you had a 60-year-old Jew living in Hawaii, you'd be the happiest person. Okay.
Well, they did that.
And they found the guy. Okay, putting aside, you know, the categories, right? Meaning, I went to the Soviet Union when it was still the Soviet Union. People weren't unhappy. They just had a different mind. We looked at them and said, oh, you're very unhappy. Look at this supermarket. They barely have any goods here. In kind of America, you get anything you want. Before Costco, but whatever, right? So we assume, wow, they must be very unhappy. You know, in retrospect, years later, everything, I didn't see a lot of unhappiness. Now they're very unhappy, by the way. They can get anything they want. They just can't afford it. Meaning, does happiness come from the amount you have or the feeling of being part of something? Of not being alone. Of having something bigger than yourself to work for. Plus a good bet. V'im yitkifo, and if he's attacked, ha'echad, ha'shnayim yamdu nekdo. Two people come to defend him. Ve'achutem shulash lo v'meira yinatek. And the three-spun string won't quickly unravel because it's strong. It's fortified. What's interesting is to see how the same philosophical social patterns that we know of today, and Shlomo was familiar with them then. And the reason why is because the world may change, but men don't. What pleasure means may change. What achdus means, what socialism means may change. But the concepts don't change. The tension between man's life being about his own pleasure, or man looking for something deeper by finding relationships, by transcending himself, that was there from the beginning of time, way before Shlomo. The next few are very interesting because they seem to be totally disconnected. Let's read them and then we'll try and figure out what they're doing here. But before we do, everyone's got the philosophy we saw here in Perek Dalet? Tov yeled miskein v'chacham mimelech zakein uchsil asher lo yadali zeher od. Better is a poor but wise youth, or youth, than an old and foolish king who no longer knows how to take care of himself. Anyone knows what this has to do with what we're talking about? What's that like? Pithy maxim. Better a young, fool, you know, down on his luck child than an old, silly king. From the prison house he emerged to reign, while even in his reign he was born poor. I see all the things that happen with the second kid. Even the later ones won't be happy. Gam ze hevel v'rayon ruch. Anyone?
Is he talking about himself?
He's the young foolish king? The young foolish kid coming out of prison?
He's the old king who doesn't know anything.
I think that's true, by the way. I think that part is about himself. But we only figured out half the story. Part of the reason we don't know the other half of the story is because we don't know Nach well enough. Who is the main king after Shlomo HaMelech? That's why I said main king. Rehavam was his descendant who initially ruled over the whole empire. It didn't take him long because he was an idiot, as we spoke about earlier, to ruin it all. And who took over for real?
Yeravam.
Where was Yeravam when Shlomo was king?
Egypt.
What was he doing there?
Hiding.
Where was he hiding? He wasn't really hiding. He was in prison. I'll tell you how he got into prison. Where was Yeravam before he was in Egypt? In Eretz Yisrael. He was one of Shlomo HaMelech's officers. He helped him build the Milo. What's called in Tanakh the Milo. It's a debate what exactly that means. It says this in Sefer Melachim. But what happened? He turned against Shlomo. Anyone knows why? Anyone remembers what it says there?
No,
that was later. That was after he turned. What?
He built it so people couldn't channel easily.
And that's later. That's what he did when he became king. He rebelled against Shlomo because he claimed that Shlomo was taking all the money from the people to build his projects and he didn't care about the people. We'll get back to the significance of that in a minute. Now, in the old days, when you were in opposition to the king, didn't mean you set up a political party. You had to run away. Now, if you're Egypt, what are you going to do with this Yeravam ben Nevat? What are your options?
Kill him.
Kill him, which is what Shlomo HaMelech expects you to do, right? Why would you not kill him?
Because you kind of like the rebellion.
Because it's a good card to have. You can't let him be free because then Shlomo, that's an act of war. So what do you do with him? You imprison him. That's called keeping him on ice. When do you let him out?
When you're ready for him to.
When Shlomo dies. You destabilize the kingdom on the north. Yeravam came back after Shlomo died. Says to Rehavam, you gotta lower taxes. Give me 3 days, Rehavam says. 3 days later, he came back. No, and that's when the empire split. What was Yeravam ben Nevat's platform?
People reform.
What?
Reform.
What does perform mean?
Change.
What? Change in what way?
Socialism.
The people. You collect all the money for the king, it's for the people. And what does Shlomo HaMelech say about Yeravam, this young kid is going to come out of jail when the old king is too old and foolish to stop him? What does he say about that kid? He's going to rule, and how is his rulership going to be? People going to be happy? What does Shlomo HaMelech say about what's going to happen? Are people going to be happy?
No Lad Rash.
What?
No Lad Rash.
He's No Lad Rash, and when he becomes king, are people going to be happy? Everyone look together at Pasuk Ted Zion, starting Ted Vav. By the way, were people happy with Yeravam?
No.
What?
Yeah.
It means the second king after this king. That's what I think it means. He's calling him the second kid. As opposed to, he's the first kid and this is the second kid. I understand. That's what I think. You can tell me if you have a different shot later. In any case, why were people not happy with Yeravam?
People are still going to be poor. It's still going to be...
Did Yeravam really help the people? Why not?
You can't fix the world.
Soviet Union. Why does socialism not work? Beautiful note. Why does it not work? Doesn't it make sense to collect all the resources and be unified? Why does it not work?
It's
that's in an ideal world.
And in the real world, why doesn't it work?
Because
what?
We're not ideal people.
Mm-hmm.
Explain. People are, don't make it sound so bad, people are?
Selfish.
They might call that corrupt, right? When you're governing the Soviet Union and talking about the people and you're taking for yourself, the right word to call selfish is corrupt. But really begins with the fact that people are selfish. It'd be nice to be all unified. It'd be nice to all work together, but ultimately, the world consists of two kinds of people. The suckers and the one who suck the juice out. I mean, socialist societies consist of that. It doesn't work. And you don't need to go back to your oven to see this. All you need to do is go to any South American country. And if there isn't a coup going on today, there'll be one tomorrow. And the platform in South America, in Africa, in all these countries, every single time, of every single person doing the coup is the people. The people! We're here for the people! Just look at Egypt every 2 months. The people! And you know what? I want to be down the kafschus. I think the people doing the coup really intend it. You saw the movie about the last king of Scotland, right? With Idi Amin? What was that movie called? You know what I'm talking about? These dictators, they tried to show that initially he did intend for that. But power, and you know, when you finally get there, suddenly people don't seem as important as they once seemed. I think Perón in Argentina and all these places. The platform of the people, which is something that appeals, is appealing. It makes sense, but it doesn't work. Because ultimately human beings are made to care about themselves. And that's, of course, the tension of marriage. The tension of marriage is that we know that we're supposed to care for other people and give to other people and make other people happy. We know that that's the way it's supposed to be, and we know the simcha that comes from that. But ultimately, we care about ourselves. That's the way it is. So how do we balance between the higher mission and the lower sense of self? You try and erase that sense of self, Buddha style. You're neutering people. That's not what it's supposed to be. We love everyone. We love everyone equally. That's not true. We have to try and love other people even as we love ourselves. That philosophy is unrealistic. Let's get now to the next. End of Perek Dalet. We'll have to continue much more with this next time. What's the difference between the next Pasuk, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yedzayin, and the first four Parakim? How is it different? This is an example. You're looking for Jeremy? He's right here. You want him to come out or you want to come in? Hmm? You want him to come out or you to come in?
Oh yeah, we're about to leave.
You're about to leave? Sorry, Charlie. Okay. Second tense. He's coming. Don't worry, he's not tied down. It's okay, yeah. What's the difference between Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yedzayin, and all the Pesukim before?
God.
God was mentioned in Pesukim before. It is interesting that it mentions God, but God was mentioned. Where was the last time God was mentioned, for the record? It's true we haven't heard about God for a long time, but we have heard of Him. Let's go back to Perek Gimel Pasuk Tet Vav. Mashaya Kfar Hu Vashadiot Kfar Yav Ve'Elokim Yivakesh Etan Yerdaf. Right?
Giving advice.
We also saw Him in Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Zayin. What do you mean He's giving advice? Sure.
He starts talking to the person and not speaking about His own past.
It's speaking in second person. Uncle Sam wants you. Right? You ever see that? It's much more than one can say, and life means this, and this is two people are better than one person, and this is... Who speaks in this kind of second-person tone? Person who thinks he knows. Giving advice, he's authoritative, he knows the truth. Mashgiach, right? Priest. The Moshmuz, right? Watch out. And of course, the question we want to ask ourselves is how the change in tense and tone is reflective of the new argument being made. Let's see what he's saying. Shmor raglecha kasher teilech al beit Elokim. Watch your feet when you go to God's house. V'karov lishmoa mitei taksilim zavach. And be quicker to listen than to give the foolish offering. Ki einam yodim lasot ra. Very interesting phrase. They so lack knowledge that they don't even know how to do evil. Well, we have to find that out, right? I'm going to read a couple of psukim so we can see the general thing. Another warning: Al tibahel al picha, v'libcha al yimaher lahotzi davar lefnei Elokim. כאלוקים בשמיים ואתה על הארץ. אל כן יהיו דבריך מעטים. Don't be quick to speak. Don't allow your heart to speak too quickly, because God is above and you're on the ground. So your words should be few. What can we say having read two psukim? What kind of person is speaking here? What's he saying?
God controls everything.
We'll get to that soon. He's not yet talking about control, but he definitely talks about God.
Cheers.
And what is he telling man in relation to God? Man should be
less.
What?
Less.
And does he say less? Fewer words.
Everything you do is less.
Fewer words. That's the only place he uses fewer, and that's words. Yeah.
Like,
how does it connect to Pasuk Zayin? Submissive, I think, is correct, but not what he's saying. Go back to Pasuk Zayin. No. How could you summarize Pasuk Zayin in our own words? Shmor raglecha. Watch where you step. Watch where you step when you go to God's house. Watch what you offer. Watch what you say. Be careful in the presence of God.
It's more like he's more like putting a fear into you than a
fear.
Love.
Yeah, that's for sure. Why should man be careful about what he says? Why should man not speak so quickly? What reason does he give in Pasuk Aleph? Why should man not be so quick to speak? No?
So we're on the ground.
Ki elokim b'shamayim v'ata al ha'aretz. Well, a very simple explanation. You don't see very much. Okay, you say, well, today we have airplanes. And, you know, that's just used as a muscle for a much bigger picture, right? You understand very little. You should be careful what you say. Now, when he says, when you go to God's house, what does it mean? When you're standing outside shul, you can make fun of the rabbi. But when you walk in, be careful. You're in God's house. Shmor raglecha kasher teilech al beit Elokim. There is a house in New Orleans. For your time? They call the rising sun. And it's been the home many a poor boy. Amr. What does it mean when you go to God's house? You're in God's house. God's house is a way of a mashal for the world. You know, Yirat Elokim is supposed to be the sense of God's presence. A person shouldn't walk with a koma skufa, shouldn't walk the Aramas without a kippah, or in God's presence. Let me give you a mashal. You guys have been in Israel long enough. Have you ever taken a tramp? Let's say in America. You get a ride from someone from Morishad or Moshava, whatever it is. Right? You don't know the people. You got this tramp. When you sit in the car, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to act there? Right? Get in the back seat. What do? Nothing. You just sit there. You lay low. This is if you're a normal person. Say an American. If you're an Israeli, you get in the car. Move the seat up! These are real examples. Can you turn the radio down? I'm on my cell phone here. You roll the window down. Even people, I come to my car one day, it's the back seat soaking wet. The window's open. I think, how'd the window get open? I realize the guy I gave a trip must have opened the window. Now, it's one thing to open the window without even asking. It's another thing not even close it before you get out. Because Israelis, they own everything. They make themselves at home. It's their place. You get into a car, you smush your feet into the back seat, behind the seat, they're crumpled up. You don't even want to move your feet because you might attract his attention. And you're just a fly on the wall. Imagine you were invited to serve tea at a meeting of the G8. And this would be easier to imagine if, you know, once upon a time when there were leaders who were worth respect. You know, imagine kings who could chop your head off. You come there, hey guys, look at me juggling tea bots. You know? Hey, I like your watch, dude. Not the way we act today. You'd walk in there carefully, pour the tea, put it down, back away, just get in, get out, right? That's Yirat Elokim. Tavinga, we walk around here, lightheaded, chok pinu, no problem, here we are, we do what we want. Yeah, dude! You see Rav Nevinsal walking down the street. Hey, dude! What's going on, man? Now, it's not just because, you know, I met a guy at a wedding on Sunday. He said to me that his father-in-law used to play soccer with Rav Neventhal, and his nickname was Vigo. Like, yeah, I don't know about that, but you know. I should know Rav Neventhal, when he was a kid, his father sent him to like a communist school. Well, not a communist school, excuse me. A regular school. And Rav Neventhal, it seems, got into communism. He became like a fan of Stalin. And he formed like the communist group in the school. And they kicked him out of school. And he always credits Stalin for his being a Ben Torah, because when he got kicked out of that school, he had to go to a religious school. And, he became Rav Neventhal. I assume the Vigo was maybe from from the first school. But then again, you know what I'm saying? Because it's a sentence. You're a Shemayim, you're a Selokim, right? Be careful. Be cautious. It's the fool who says a lot. Doesn't know what he's talking about. Next image, very similar. Kasher tidor neder lelokim. When you make a commitment to God, al te'acher l'shalmo. Don't be late in paying. Because God is even stronger than the Godfather. Ki ein chefetz baksilim. God has no desire for fools. At asher tidor shalem. In fact, Tova Shalotidor, Rishitidor, it's even better not to make a vow. In fact, Pasuk Hey says, Al titain et picha lachati et pisarecha. Don't let your mouth cause you to sin. How is a vow a sin? What's wrong with a vow? Oh, you mean if you won't keep it? So Akiva is saying, you shouldn't make a vow because you might not keep it. I think that's true. I think he's saying there's even a problem with the basic nature of a vow. Even if you keep it. I think, yeah?
It's assuming that you have extra, that you're perfect where you are right now, meaning that you need something extra to do.
It's assuming you're perfect or assuming you're extra?
Assuming that you have everything you need, that you don't need anything else, that you have
it. A vow is Dafka saying, oh, well, a vow could be I'm going to learn Maseches Makos, right? Yeah?
It's too extreme.
How is it too extreme? What's wrong with it?
Yeah. You don't run the world.
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't run the world?
How are you supposed to know what you'll be able to do?
That's exactly it, right? If I say, Shel Yaakov, I'll speak to you tomorrow. That makes a lot of assumptions. Now, we make those assumptions all the time. It assumes I'm going to get up tomorrow. I don't mean early or late. I mean be alive. It assumes I'll get in on time. It assumes, right? So I always say, I'll try and speak to you tomorrow. I hope to speak to you. I'll come over tomorrow. We'll see what we can do, right? Meaning, I'm going to say, okay, tomorrow. I hope tomorrow. Mir Tashem tomorrow. I'm going to say, Mir Tashem, it means I'm firm, right? And once, Rebbe came over to me and says, how you feeling? I said, Baruch Hashem. He said, I didn't ask you if you're religious. I once asked someone, how you feeling? He said, Baruch Hashem. He goes, actually, not really. I said, not really, Baruch Hashem? Baruch Hashem is synonymous with, I'm feeling fine. The same way, how you doing is synonymous with, I'm not interested in talking to you, go away. How you doing? It's like, hi, bye, how you doing? How you doing? How you doing? Every response to someone, how you doing? Actually, no, I don't know. How you doing? You should know. I even see him, sometimes I say to him, how's it going? Guy doesn't really think I want an answer. He just thinks it's like, the way you say hello. How's it going? I'm still looking at him. He's like, okay, is that the answer, I'm asking, how you doing? I understand, the words have lost their meaning. Hey, Finn, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. So, Bli Nether is part of that. Bli Nether, Bli Nether, Bli Nether, but I don't want to make a nether. It's much deeper than that. So, you don't want to sound from Chas V'Shalom, but at least express the fact that you recognize the world is not in your control. Again, Al titein et picha lachati et pisarecha. V'al tomar lefnei amalach kishkagahi. When you say, I'll talk to you tomorrow, and you don't show up because you were late because of traffic, what do you say? It wasn't my fault. It was Shogeg. It was traffic. It's absolutely your fault. Why is it your fault?
You made it down in the first place.
Why did you say I'm going to be there tomorrow? I'll try to be there tomorrow. I hope to be tomorrow. I intend to be there tomorrow. I'll do my best to be there tomorrow, right? My brother, I was hoping to get my brother before Shabbos. So he asked, my younger brother lives in Phoenix. So I said, what time are you going to be there? I said, I hope around 2. So I call him, 10 to 2. So I'm stuck in traffic in the parking lot on the, FDR Drive and Harlem River Drive. He goes, you said you'd be there too? I said, is that really what I said? He goes, yeah, you said too. I said, I don't know, take a close look. He comes back, goes, you said, I just looked, he said, I hope. I said, I did hope. I do hope. What do you want me to do? I really did hope. I even tried. I did more than hope. I even got off the Harlem River Drive, drove through Harlem. That's dangerous. I saw some of the chevra over there, right? And you start checking your doors locked. What are you going to do, right? Alto ma'alifnei ha'malach kishkagahi. Don't claim that it wasn't your fault when you make a commitment that's not in your hands to fulfill, which is any commitment. Here comes the strongest part. You ready? Lama yiktsofe elokim al kolecha v'chibel et ma'aseh yadecha. Why should God get angry at your voice? V'chibel. What does v'chibel mean? Like a michabel. Sabotage your efforts. You ever notice you're working on some project, right? You're all, oh, I got it. It's all working. It's all coming together. Big, big, yeah, man. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, monkey wrench. And we could just say, well, that's the way it happens, right? He's saying something bigger. When a person's mistaken sense of control gets to their head, when they start acting like they can do whatever they want, they can be wherever they want, they're going to get wherever they want, they can do whatever they want, that's when God shows you, you control something. I know someone was supposed to be at Bris in New York Sunday morning, took the flight from Israel, you know, at 12 o'clock, had 2-3 hours in between, no luggage. I don't know if anyone knows, Mati Shav's Ben Gurion, they had a fuel tainting problem. None of the planes could take off. Check the weather, it's all fine. What do we control? Now again, we like to convince ourselves we're in control. It's a fluke. You want to hear something cool? What does society, like insurance companies, what do they call an unforeseen catastrophe? An act of God. Did we talk about this? Have we talked to you guys about this? Meaning, getting up in the morning, that's not an act of God, that's my power. But getting there on time, that's an act of God. It's only an act of God when we have no one else to blame it on. And that's the problem. That's Yirat Shamayim. So what's this guy saying? What does that have to do with what we're talking about here? Pasuk Vav. Ki berov chalamot bavalim d'orim harbei ki et elokim yirah. We have to give names to the voices we've seen so far. The first voice in Perek Gimel was the hedonist, actually the religious hedonist. Perek Dalet, the socialist. That's just, you know. Perek He, the Yirei Elokim. How are these psukim a response to the speakers that came before? What's he saying to them? Apply this to them, yeah.
It seems like he's describing a world without rationing.
Well, one could reach that conclusion from what he's saying. We haven't yet seen what he is saying. We're just seeing his response. You with me? So you could go that way. I'll let you know next time he's not going that way. I happen to know a little more because I've read it, right? But it could go that way. Everything we've seen could go that way. How is it a response to what's coming before? Because it's clear he's speaking to someone, right? I think what he's saying is the first two speakers speak as if they know. They have it all figured out. What's he saying? You know what you're talking about. You shouldn't be so fast to speak as if you know what you're talking about. You haven't the faintest idea. You should know that you don't know. Now, of course, the question becomes, so, okay, we don't know now. Well, now, how should we live our lives? Right? Well, what does this mean? Tachlis. And the cool part of Koheles is that not only does he consider and debunk philosophies that don't have anything to do with religion, he rips on religion too. The next time we're going to first have to see the Yirei Elokim present his philosophy, and then you're going to see how mercilessly Kohelet rips apart the possibility of relying on God as a basis for happiness in life. See, everyone should show up next time, right? Mela, you know, we're ripping on like hedonism. Okay, fine, socialism. We're ripping on religion. We should put up signs to bring people in from the street. This is going to be good, right? Yeah, but first we'll try and, you know, see how religion could be of value. No, we've already debunked that, no. Okay, questions, needs, things? All right. Have a good week.